Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We're the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. Ethan Huffnagel, as always, is our executive existent. He is existent.
Heck yeah.
Not exhumed. He is the executive assistant to the regional producer. We have heard some feedback from listeners. We appreciate it that there was some audio bad white noise in the background, and we have solved that. We just turned off the heater in the studio.
So we might freeze to death, but we will be here doing a podcast.
But your sound quality is better. We are committed to professionalism and quality, at least in the production, if not in the actual content.
That comes later. That comes second.
It's like Creed Bratton. It's like, what do I do here? Quabity Ashuins. No, that's not it, but I'm getting close. We do not have a Quabity Ashuins manager here. We just talk and send it. Anyway, if you do enjoy this podcast, surprisingly enough, but if you do, help us out with the algorithms. Please like, subscribe, share, review. It helps us out with all the electronic stuff, the algorithms, the AI, the SEO, the IMS.
Oh, there we go. Yes. I was going to say, this is like a 996 forum with all these acronyms floating around.
Yes. There's so many podcasts out there. We appreciate very much that you've chosen to listen to this one, but help others find it too. I feel like we're the best podcast that they've never found yet.
Absolutely.
Until they find us, and then they can determine that. But, you know, they don't know what they don't know. Warm-up lap for you audio listeners. You already got a little bit already, more than you bargained for. We've touched on a challenge that we're doing, Top Gear-esque, I guess, but really just for us friends. There's about a dozen of us who challenged each other and said, okay, we always talk about getting certain cars, right? And we all have cool cars, so it's not like, oh, you haven't bought a real sports car, except for our friend Arnab, who took forever and finally bought a Cayman GT4 this year. Nice. After being a doctor or a surgeon for a long time and, yeah, being totally financially ready and just overthinking the entire process. So, but many of us are guilty of overthinking or just talking about buying a car that we, you know, have always wanted to buy. Nostalgic bug, whatever it may be. And so we said, okay, well, let's make this formal. 2 years ago, we said in 3 years, because we wanted to have enough time for life circumstances to work and, you know, the market to go up and down and, you know, us to save money. Said, okay, everyone has to pick two cars that their friends are tired of hearing about us talking about, that I'm going to buy this car sometime and never do. And then we all get a country, and this is the poo or get off the pot challenge. And if we do not show up in April of 2026 with one of these two cars that we have identified as the cars that we won't shut up about, we have to show up with a car from said country. Now, it could be manufactured there. The parent company could be there. It could be powered.
Yeah.
From there. So, like, Ford Taurus SHO would count if you had the company of Japan.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like there's a lot more interesting things you could do, but that there are some weird countries that's an example, right?
You know, like a Pontiac G8 could be Australia or America.
Yeah.
Right? Ties to both. So, as long as it has ties to that country that can be justified, then you can show up with a car from that country. Now, the key is that the countries can only be used once.
Yes.
So the longer you wait to get in on this challenge, or the later you get invited, the worse your country might be.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel right now.
Yes, indeed. Tyler has, the reason we bring this up, even if we brought it up already, is Tyler has a Porsche 996 GT3 and a Porsche 993 on his list.
Yes.
And his country is America.
Because when we put this list together, I had never owned an American car. And kind of some of the original spirit behind the country was to expand your automotive horizons from a country you don't normally buy from.
Right.
Like Germany would be bad for either of us.
Yes. Yeah. That's not a challenge. Not hard. We already own one. So he has a Corvette pace car, which is awesome for him. He loves it more than he ever thought he would. But now he is selling it. So he has removed his backup. He has no contingency plan. So he either has to go buy another American car or actually get into a 993 or 996 GT3.
There are so many other American car options. There's even another pace car, Doug, that I would buy to satisfy. And I would love that excuse.
So anyway, that is it. But speaking of buying cars, this is a topic that's come up quite often, and it's especially relevant also because within our circle, Mr. Ethan Huffnagel, our producer, is engaged and he's getting married this fall. What's the date and the address to the venue, Ethan, for everybody? And he asked me about what wedding car he should use. And I said, well, this is a super fun discussion. I've had a lot of wedding cars, not my own weddings. I'm not a
wow, Doug.
Only that's what we're for myself. I've been involved in providing a lot of wedding cars to people, and so along the way, I've kind of been like, man, this is really fun to help identify what's a good wedding car for people, what might suit their needs, what's fun. Sometimes they're car guys that want to have like that part of their wedding for themselves. You know, the bride kind of gets everything else. The guys get to pick out they don't even really get to pick out their suits. That has to coordinate with the bridal party theme.
Generally,
you know?
Well, you don't want to clash. I mean, let's be fair here. You don't want to clash.
Yeah. The groom picks the bride, I guess. Yeah, and then she picks everything else. So anyway, the guys get to like, all right, I get my car. I can have a cool car. But some of them aren't even car people. They just want something to go. I don't know. It's a fun exit, right? You leave the wedding venue in a shower of rice or flowers or whatever it may be. And you want to leave in a hot car. Do a burnout.
Yeah. I don't want to cut this segment short, Doug, but we know the answer for Ethan's wedding car. It is a Murano Cross Cabriolet. You can put the top down, put some cans or ribbons or whatever off the back.
That'd be pretty good.
They can sit up on the convertible top like a homecoming queen or whatever in a parade and just like wave to everybody as they're being driven in a cross cab.
Wow.
Sold.
Indeed.
Segment over.
Really, yeah.
I have an alternative, though. But part of the advice I gave to Ethan, and this is important, and I'll tell some stories about some of the cars that we have used that went well or not so well, but a convertible is almost paramount, right? Unless you are being driven, right? That's the first decision you have to make. Am I being driven or am I driving? Because if you're being driven, then you want a chauffeur-type vehicle. That could be a convertible, you know, big four-seat convertible, plenty of room in the back, an old suicide door Lincoln Continental. I've seen a couple friends of mine have used vintage Rolls Royces. Our wedding, we used a Toyota Century, which is like the JDM Rolls Royce. And it was not just any Toyota Century. It was, well, it was on Jay Leno's garage. It was previously owned allegedly by the Japanese mob, which is Yakuza. And there was probably a blood stain in the carpet in the trunk.
Or some stuff.
So
it was left.
Yeah, maybe. In the carpet. Maybe. Maybe somebody was in the trunk of that car.
What a cool car.
The Japanese Jimmy Hoffa.
Did you or Aaron put your feet through the seat?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
It's so good.
Reclining massage heated rear seats. And on the passenger side, there's a pass through from the front seat. So you can like recline totally.
Oh. That car was amazing. And it's the best, like, cloth, plush, like, just luxurious. They had it figured out.
It had lace curtains, which I could close, close out the paparazzi. I mean, it was great. It was a perfect, like, mix of car guy, obscure, this is a subtle flex, and this actually goes with the wedding. It was beautiful. It was smooth. It was a nice ride. you know, the car guys often want to do the sports car thing, do a big smoky burnout. I've done that too. I've helped my friends do that. But that's not always the answer. And convertibles, I will tell you guys right now, they're best for pictures. You might think, oh man, I want a Ferrari F8 or something like that because that's cool. So hard to get pictures. You can't get the car and the bride and the groom in the car unless your photographer's amazing and can like cut out the reflection of the glass in the moment. And it just, it doesn't, it's so much harder.
Doug, you're kind of, you know, we talked a little bit, you know, that I will be getting rid of my pace car. That is a convertible. And maybe one day, maybe I just keep it long enough until it's time for me. And, problem solved.
I would play strong bets. If you could actually find not only a straight male, but a wife that would go along with having that in their wedding.
Oh yeah, no, that would not work for me.
That is
that would be kiboshed immediately.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Hank might have a Corvette pace car at his wedding. But short of that,
Oh, it'd be beautiful.
All right, I have another suggestion for Ethan, and we welcome your suggestions in the comments too. He's becoming a car guy somewhat.
Sure.
So he does have appreciation, but he's not like car nerd or anything like that. So you said Murano Cross.
Oh, heck yeah, I did.
Which is the right answer.
Can we even get one of those like answer, on a Toro or something?
I'm sure we could. Sure we could.
Goodness.
I'll drive
the right answer.
Wait, be chauffeured.
Is a Nissan Figaro.
Ooh,
it's yes. Like the OG JDM Murano Cross Cab.
Yeah, because you can put the whole thing down.
You can put the whole roof down.
You teach me to do a burnout in that?
I don't know if it can.
Probably not.
Oh, that would be like the two of them in a Figaro. That would be amazing.
It's cute, right? It's adorable. Like cute cars are good for weddings, and I had suggested you use my Fiat 600. Like mm-hmm. old Italian cars, little tiny cars. Mm-hmm. They're cute. Wedding plus cute is great. And a Figaro is like it's the modern version of an old little Italian Fiat.
It was very cute. Yeah.
And
very appropriate for the wedding. And you know what? Our wedding colors are black. And the one that you sent me.
That's funeral colors are black.
Yeah, what kind of message are you trying to send here, bud?
What? You've never been to a wedding where they wear black and white?
Well, yes, but white is the... Is she wearing a black dress?
Okay, no, she's not wearing a black dress.
Okay, then your wedding colors are not black.
But I'm not wearing a white suit. I'm new to this all. I'm not wearing a white suit.
What
I'm
is the first time accent guys color?
Huh?
What is the accent color? What your ties?
Probably just black ties, right? It's going to be very black and white with accent colors. There'd be some gold mixed in there, right?
This is a very traditional guy. What a traditional couple in a Nissan in a Figaro.
Nissan Figaro.
What color are the bridesmaids' dresses? Don't know. Good man.
Nice.
Perfect. Ask the wedding planner. Okay, well.
He's like, I got somebody for that.
So the question is, how hard is it to find? Like, if you're looking for a wedding car, right? Do you use a Lambo? Do you use a Ferrari? People use all that stuff. So, like, if you're actually trying to find one, Tyler, you did some digging. How hard is it to find a good wedding car?
It is so difficult. It is like something has happened with the SEO optimization of finding good wedding cars. Because when I search unique wedding car, wild wedding car, interesting wedding car, I'm getting websites from the UK and Australia, like just through Google. Like it knows where I'm at. And all of it is also kind of the same. It's all either your Lambos or like Fiat 500s.
And they're probably all the same cars, stock photos. The sites are just keyword stuffing and they're subbing things out to other companies.
It is so difficult.
I know this. Well, I don't know this because, but I've experienced this because one of those big companies in the UK, Cars for Stars, was the one that threatened to sue me over owning the carsforstars.com domain name. And the deeper I looked into their operation, they were the self-proclaimed largest car hire service in the UK, limos, you know, chauffeured cars, etc. But they really didn't own anything other than IP. They had thousands of domain names and a bunch of websites and were just backlinking to each other, and they owned all of the space in SEO, but you had no idea who you were actually contracting with or renting from or what the real inventory is. And I think that's probably the case with wedding cars, because it's such a weddings in general are such a huge industry that, like, yeah, this little niche of I want a, you know, Ferrari 308 for my wedding, like, you just gotta know somebody who has, yeah, one.
Well, and like, I think we were talking earlier and you made the point that nobody's like, oh, I got my wedding car guy. You know, you got a guy for like, I got my mechanic, I got my like home improvement guy, I know a guy. There's no guy for this.
So I have become that guy, honestly. I have people that message me, and please, after this episode, just because I've said I've loaned cars to my friends for weddings, like, I was usually in their weddings, right? I've had people from my church email me, no joke, that I like sort of knew, never been to their house, never hung out with them other than just like passing them in church or whatever, social groups. And they were like, hey, I heard you're in the exotic car business. You have cars. We're getting married. And we wondered if it didn't even offer to rent. Like, what? Would you let us use XYZ whatever for our wedding? And I was like, am I at least getting invited to the wedding? Like, hey,
can you imagine? You drop off the car like, okay, thanks, see you tomorrow.
Exactly. Like, well, you're literally want me to drop off the car, leave, go buy dinner when you're serving it. I don't even know you. Like, how?
Also, like, the insurance liability?
No kidding. Like, how brash do you have to be to do that, right? Like, so, I am a sucker for a good wedding, even if I don't know people. I've crashed a wedding before. So if you really, really want to use one of my cars for your wedding, you can at least send me an invite and I'll consider. I will consider it, depending on where the wedding is, what kind of food you're serving, if there's fresh lobster, you know, et cetera.
Ooh, yeah, get a little lobster roll appetizers, like little guys you can just pop in your mouth.
Exactly.
There we go.
Yes. So... Just throwing that out there. If you want to use your friend's car for a wedding, make sure there's an offset offer. Like, assume that because they have a cool car, they want to see it in your wedding.
Ethan, have you been one of these guys that has been asking? Did you do it under some sort of code
name?
Well,
that's the thing. Yeah, I don't know Doug that well, so I felt guilty when I asked him. But I do have confirmation that they are wearing black. The bridesmaids.
The bridesmaids are wearing black dresses.
I dig that.
That's a new one.
That's metal.
So.
Is it like a, I'm sure it has a sheen to it. It's not just like a dark black, like this table cover.
I would guess, probably.
Yeah.
All this to say.
Bring a lint roller.
All this to say, yes, bring a lint roller. If you're one of the bridesmaids watching this, which I know you all are, bring a lint roller.
No, that's the groomsman's duty, is to think of these things.
That's what I'm doing
now.
We did a whole podcast episode about it, doggone. No, but all that to say, the Figaro that you referenced was black, and that was why I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it's also adorable.
And it's
just
cute.
Oh, my God. That would photograph wonderfully, I think.
Yes.
And it would just look good in the background. Like, if you get a shot of the dash, that's all, like, really style. It's really well styled. So, I think that would be good. Or
people,
I'm telling
talk
you.
Talk about it.
I will
I do like to be
chauffeur
about.
You in a Murano Crosscat.
I do like the idea.
I will wear a whole thing with a hat, and I'll open the doors. I just hope I would also get dinner, maybe. But hey, I don't want to invite myself. But I will drive
it's
your cross cap.
All right, on to the shrewd negotiator. This one submitted to us by Myron Vernis, previous guest and good friend of the podcast. There's a Saturn Sky on Marketplace title.
Isn't the Sky the like companion to the Pontiac Solstice? Like,
yes.
Little roadster.
Yes. And every year, June 21st, I make the joke, summer solstice, summer not. And I post a picture of a Saturn Sky. Anyway, so this Saturn Sky was listed for sale with no title, $3,500. Oh, but it says the vehicle is paid off in the description. No title, clean VIN.
What does that even mean?
Right? Price's firm won't find another this clean for anywhere close to 4K. Perfect interior, heat and AC all work great. No leaks from top, no rust. Factory LSD. So anyway, Myron messages this guy and is like, hey, why is there no title?
Yeah, like, what's
going
on?
He says, well, there was a lien on the vehicle. It went unpaid. The bank eventually gave up and charged off the loan, leaving me with a car and no title, and the bank with a title but no car.
Is there no way to resolve this?
Yeah, here's the funny thing. I think people think that because something gets charged off, means like they don't owe it anymore.
Yeah, it's as if the loan got like just poof,
right?
Gone.
Not true. Not true. So there is currently an active Ohio title with a lien on it. So it's not that there's no title. It's just he doesn't have the title. He does not legally own the car. The lien comes back to Capital Community Bank, and the address in California is Wheels Financial DBA Loan Mart, which is a title loan facility. So this dude got a title loan, probably super crazy high interest,
whew,
on his Saturn Sky, didn't pay them, thinks that because it was charged off, he now owns the car, even though he doesn't have a title, which is not true. A charge off just means that the bank has written it off in the sense of like, oh, we don't think we're going to get this money. So they stop trying to collect it, and they stop accumulating fees and interest and stuff like that.
So, like, how far do you have to get before that happens? Because like, I'm
far.
Guessing they'll try really hard
and
to
or
get
sell
their money
to collections,
yeah,
before that. But they still could sell a charged off debt to collections, and you still owe the money. So if you like opened an account at that bank, they would literally just take the money from your account against that loan that had been charged off.
Yikes.
So this guy still owes the money, and they still own the car, but he's selling it on Marketplace. Some guy bought it, so it's for sale for $3,500. It then gets relisted by this other guy. Again, no title, $4,000, and then he increased the price to $4,500. So he's trying to do some like no title arbitrage here.
Nice.
Says he bought it to make into a drift car, but like ran out of time, whatever.
Ran out of time in a week.
yeah. He has a plate on the car that comes back to a Chevy Blazer.
Nice.
So don't drive that around town. But he does note in the description that it be fine. The car would be fine to drive around town. Like it runs good. And I'm like,
yeah.
The car might be, but don't get pulled over on a fictitious plate on a car that you don't own.
Yikes.
That a bank wants. Yeah. So the guy who bought it is pleading ignorance and says that he bought it from a shop where the bills went unpaid, which I guess tracks. If the guy didn't pay his title loan, he also didn't pay the shop. And so he just bought it cash. And I was like, well, why didn't the shop get a mechanic's lien? Because that's a thing you can legally do.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how that works. Like,
it sounds like they don't know how any of this works.
Yeah. But they thought they could do a quick flip real quick, you know, and yikes.
Ooh, hey, Ethan, Saturn Sky, wedding car, top down convertible. Let's go. We can get one real cheap. Real cheap.
No title. I'll just put a dealer tag on it, right? That's what dealer tags are for, right? Yikes.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
In the news this week, a couple weeks ago, sorry, Ferrari CEO wants to stop customers from ruining its cars. That's a headline from CarThrottle.com.
What could that possibly mean? Ruining a Ferrari?
Well, there's a lot of rumors or things that have been blown out of proportion about how controlling or not controlling Ferrari is regarding the aftermarket on their cars, both resale and modifications. And there's some generally believed ideas out there that you're not allowed to modify your Ferrari or Ferrari will sue you, right? So with my million-mile Ferrari that has aftermarket wheels, I've crapped on Ferrari's build quality quite a bit because of how badly they age. And people keep saying like, oh my gosh, Ferrari's going to sue you. Watch out, Ferrari's going to sue you. I'm like, for what? Owning a car? It's an old Ferrari. They don't care that much. They do. They do care about their brand image. And that goes all the way back, right? That's why Ferrari has the Classiche certification, where you can pay thousands of dollars for them to look at pictures of your car that you submit and tell you that, yes, your car is the way it left the factory. And then you take your Ferrari with its Classiche red book and you go to the Ferrari Club Concours, and then you all win platinum awards because all of your cars are original. And then you say, I won platinum. And it's like, well, so did the other 17 Ferrari 430s that were in your class. Anyway, I digress. This is the Ferrari system. But what Ferrari is talking about, or what this article is talking about, is not aftermarket modifications. It's not even the resale of Ferraris, which we will get into in this discussion, but they're talking about the original spec.
Really?
Yes.
Well, and I actually think before we get into that, a lot of people, I feel like, and maybe this is just the first time I remember hearing of it, but there was the whole dead mouse Ferrari, the blue Ferrari with the neon cat like rainbow thing on livery on the side, because everybody thinks, oh, he put a livery on a 458 and that's why Ferrari got him.
Nope.
But it was because he made custom badges mimicking the Ferrari logo.
Correct.
So it's
a prancing cat, and he violated trademark.
Yep. And but I feel like everybody remembers this as a, oh my God, it was the rap. So
correct.
They think anytime you do anything like this, Ferrari's just going to come after you.
Absolutely correct. Right. So they, like, look at all the Liberty Walk Ferraris. It doesn't matter how you modify the car. You cannot touch their name, their trademarks, their logos, because he changed Ferrari to Ferrari.
Yep.
Same thing, Damon from Daily Driven Exotics, which, editorial note, can't stand their stuff, but he made this video, total clickbait. We've been accused of clickbait once or three times, and I'm like, no, you don't know what clickbait is. He made a video talking about how Ferrari's legal team sent him a letter about his 812 or F12 or whatever it was that was heavily modified twin turbo. 20 minutes into the video, he reveals that it's just a recall letter. Talk about stupidity and furthering this idea that Ferrari doesn't like people using their cars in a certain way, modifying them. Maybe Ferrari doesn't like them, but they also have really smart lawyers and they're not going to waste their time with stuff like that. They're just going to say, I'm sorry, we're not going to sell you a car. And that's how they control things. They say, you either have to buy a certain number of cars, you have to follow this process, you have to keep your cars for a certain amount of time. Now what they're saying is, well, we're going to monitor your specifications when you order your car, which is ironic because Ferrari's big driver of profit, and a lot of these companies, McLaren with their MSO program, Porsche with their PTS and CXX and exclusive programs, this is a huge profit driver for these manufacturers. And Ferrari's probably the biggest one because they actually push it and say, well, these other VIPs all bought all the new cars, the Speciale, the Apertas, the this, the that. But this person spent an extra $100,000 on tailor-made options.
Well,
so you got to spend $150,000 and do the Ferrari Challenge race this year.
It's all just comes down to fuel the Ferrari measuring contest that these guys all have. Like, well, I spend more money on TaylorMade, or I spend more money on... That's wild.
Yes. Yeah. So Ferrari's making a fortune off of this system whereby customers all have a one-of-one spec and a better one-of-one than the next guy. It's like Corvette fever with lots and lots of money thrown at it. But now they're saying, well, we're going to limit them to not do too outlandish specifications. So the Ferrari CEO, according to this article, said, quote, "We have been thinking internally maybe to predefine the color combinations. We have to pay attention because we have to defend the values and the identity of the brand. We will not make a strange car for sure." Well, that's a lie. They made the F80.
Yeah, seriously.
That thing looks like a Lego set. Oh, my gosh. Personalization was Ferrari's fifth biggest driver of profit of 2024. And if you look at Ferrari's profit statements, P&Ls, compared to their luxury car competitors, we unpacked this on a different episode, Ferrari took everyone to school.
Whew.
In terms of profit. They know how to make money.
Is that just for car sales, or is that their company overall?
The company overall.
See, that's why I understand why they're doing this. This seems ludicrous, but okay. Ferrari is not as much of a car company anymore as it is a brand. And they need to protect the brand to sell their hats and their coffee mugs and their, I don't know, shoes to people who dream of owning Ferraris.
Okay, but wouldn't, like they say, all press is good press? Wouldn't outlandish Ferraris, crazy spec ones, like Justin Bieber does a pink and purple Ferrari with, I don't know, his shoes stitched in the seats. I don't know. I don't know what that, I see TikTok videos and I talk about Justin Bieber's shoes. I'm like, okay. So, like, wouldn't that be a good driver of the next generation that's buying $150, $200 Pumas or whatever they cost?
But I think that nobody is going to want that car after Justin Bieber or whomever buys it. They need to protect the value that all of these dudes have put into these outlandishly priced vehicles so that they can get them when they resell it. If there's all these crazy specs that people can't resell and drives down the market, that's bad for Ferrari.
Fair point. And the article even says that. He says the desire to crack down isn't just to ensure their image is protected, but to make sure its car's secondhand values aren't impacted by garish specs when the time comes for them to be sold. Look at you, Tyler.
I did my research, Doug.
Yeah.
I was prepared.
That's a fair point. I think of the Alpine edition, not the Alpine, the Momo edition Lamborghini Diablos that were yellow with red and yellow interior. I mean, it might have been the McDonald's spec. It should have been called that.
Ooh.
Now, that was the 90s when that was kind of the norm, but good golly, was that awful.
Wow.
Ferrari is trying not to let things like that leave its stable. Yes, that was a pun. Horses stable.
I see. The prancing.
That
didn't violate their trademark, did it, Doug?
So at the end, it says the company cracking down on bolder collar combos isn't necessarily anything new. It's just news. It's apparently long prevented anyone from ordering a car in pink. But we all remember Ferraris being red, right? That's Ferraris, the resale red. Only 40% of cars leave the factory in red now.
Really?
Yes. Because personalization is the new thing.
Yeah, everybody's probably getting them in green now. Green is like the green has been made great again. Thank you very much.
Yes. And having a one-off color. I mean, my favorite quote of my own is paint to sample has become ubiquitous, right? It's no longer one of one thing. It's no longer rare.
Can we actually rant for a second? And I noticed you did this on social media. I really take umbrage when people say PTS if it didn't come from Porsche. You just painted it an awesome color.
Did Except you see that. The post I did. That I did today?
Yes,
I'm like, where did this come from?
But that is something that bothers me so much. You're like, oh, I had this painted in PTS Riviera Blue. Or that might even be the color. But it's like, no, you didn't. You painted it Riviera Blue. It's not PTS.
Well,
stop.
Here's the problem with that, though, is there's these like factory-blessed recommissioning of these supercars that are happening, though. So it's like, okay, well, Porsche issued a new certificate of authenticity for this car, so it's now paint to sample, even though it wasn't before. So if that's okay, then like, where do you draw the line from there to go, okay, well, Canepa did it and they're that's tight with Porsche, or this guy did it in his garage.
In my opinion, it's got to be on the window sticker.
I agree. I totally
just think
agree.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. And I don't know what Ferrari calls it. Probably tailor-made paint from a sample. I don't know.
Out of range paint on the window sticker. It's out of range paint or something like that.
Nice.
I don't remember offhand. Somebody in the comments will definitely educate us. It's time for our wildly popular license plate stereotype vanity game. We really need good name for this game.
License plates when we guess and try to get stereotypes correctly and as close to the real car as we can.
Yes, we don't try to guess what the meaning of the license plate is. It's typically patently obvious, but it's like, all right, well, how much does this plate reflect the owner? This is brought to you by Soul and Spine, Alan Hoover. If you have back issues and you're in the Northeast Ohio area or want to be in order to be healed, then go see Soul and Spine. Talk to Alan. Tell him you found out about us on Switchcast.
How many do you have, Doug? I have five.
I have five.
Nice. It's like we coordinate these things.
You go first.
Ladies and gents. Okay. First up. First of all of these have come from switchcast.live submissions. Thank you all so much for absolutely blowing up my inbox to finally compete with Doug. This feels good.
I still have a backlog of them, but if you want to submit them to me, send them to my Instagram. If you want Tyler to get them, go to switchcast.live/vanity.
All right. Cute SRT.
Dodge. It's either a Dodge Neon SRT, which you can't say that. You offend Dodge SRT owners.
I'd put that.
Or it's the Caliber SRT.
No, I think. Are you ready?
I'm seriously wrong?
Yeah.
Golly.
This is more of an attack, a bait.
Is it a V6?
No. I think even more of a more different.
Is like, a Ford?
Closer. That's closer.
I'm getting closer.
C7 Corvette.
Oh,
so they're saying like, hey, cute SRT.
Is it a Z06 modded because they want to race them?
Oh, I actually don't know.
Would that be race baiting?
Okay, next plate, Doug. Let's go. Our producer is so hard. He's going to turn inside
out. It's a pun. Come on. Okay, this one from Da Performance Baggers. Might nice. Be DA Performance. I don't know. It might be a district attorney with... Anyway, he's really good at bagging criminals. His performance is killer.
He's going to get after Goons LLC. He's going to take them down, Doug.
New segment, taking people's Instagram handles and guessing what they drive. Oh, gosh, I got to open my folder here so I know what I'm actually looking at. You can start guessing because I remember this one. Coal Power.
Oh, like a Dodge Ram, like a 1500.
No.
Is it a Tesla? Tesla?
No, but you're closer.
Oh.
I have to do my EV one every week.
Yeah.
It's always going to be an EV one stuck in there.
I do. Is it an EV though?
It is.
Okay. What is it?
Hummer EV.
Nice. I accept.
Yep, that's our second EV plate that we've approved.
Yeah, no, there are some good ones. Turns out people are creative.
Only two so far in the world.
All right, this one is iIndicate.
BMW.
Yes, it is a BMW 3 Series, a late model one.
Absolutely,
very good.
Because they don't use their turn signals. All right. Jay Roberts submitted this one. Flat, but spelled with a 4 instead of the A. FL4T. Flat.
Is that a Volkswagen Beetle? Something with a flat engine?
Like an old Beetle. I was thinking a new one. Those don't have... you're on the right track.
On the right track.
You got it.
Is it a... Did the Karmann Ghias have a flat 4 as well?
Yes.
Is it one of those?
No.
Dang it. Porsche 356?
No.
Ah, okay. What is it?
Subaru WRX STI.
Oh, I was dancing around the wrong tree. Same forest, wrong tree.
Same forest.
Thank you to Lauren W. for the first one, Drake F. for the last one. This one is from Davin H. OSCRMYR. Oscar Meyer.
Is it an actual wiener mobile?
You bet your bum it is. Oh, okay.
Oh, man. I'm glad he mustered up the energy to send that one to you. I relished that opportunity. Come on. You can catch up.
I'll do the... No.
All right. One of my favorite Instagram accounts to follow is Vanity of Maine. There's no filter up in Maine. You can see literally anything on their plates. And we do this one, Maine plate, ew people.
Is it a Mustang?
No.
Ew people. It's an RV.
Nope.
No. It is a Chevy Tahoe.
Nope.
Dang it. What is it?
It's a Jeep.
Really?
But not a real Jeep. It's like one of the little ones, like the Compass or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Yep. I don't think it has anything to do with a car. That's just a Mainer being a Mainer.
Next up for me is from Daryl P. SLF DRVN, self-driven.
Self-driven. well, we had self-made last week, yes. Which is a repoed Altima. Self-driven is either like a very analog car, or it's a self-driving car, or it's like somebody saying they're really like successful.
Like, yeah, like driven.
This could
like
go any way.
Which way is it? Up, down, inside out?
I'm stumped on this one.
I can just tell you.
Self-driven.
Are you ready?
Self-driven. I mean, is it a Tesla?
Yeah, it is.
FSD? It's lame. No.
I did it. I knew it would like confuse you just a little.
But I still got it. Lame. All right. My turn. Is it from Brad Heppner? Alleged.
Oh, boy. What could this possibly be? Is this a Chrysler 300?
No. I don't think most 300 owners know the meaning of alleged.
Is this a...
it's just convicted. Is charged.
Is this a white Bronco?
I almost spit out my whiskey. It should be, but it's not.
What is it?
This plate just got really lame now that it's only on a 996 turbo.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Maybe he's an attorney.
Oh,
it's really
so
good.
So good.
Yeah.
All right. Philip D. Philip D has the last one for me. Hicktown, S-C-K or H-C-K, T-W-N.
It's a pickup truck. Got to be a pickup truck.
Like, sort of right, vaguely. It's not a car.
Okay. Chevy El Camino?
No, I can see it. I might have messed you up. It's a G-Wagon from Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh. Yeah, it's weird. I don't get it, I guess. Why?
There are so many that I don't understand.
Okay.
I see them on the road.
Bougie Hicktown.
Yeah.
Okay, last one from Travis Ray, 1320 feet.
1320 feet. What is 1320? That means that's some measurement, some conversion, isn't it? A mile is 2500.
This is me. This is a sound of me taking away Tyler's man card.
What?
Or car guy card.
Car
sorry.
Guy card. Oh, God. I don't know. I'm entirely blanking.
You guess on the car?
I don't even 1320 feet. What could this
1320 feet is a quarter mile.
Oh, is it a Dodge Charger?
No.
Oh,
no. It's a proper drag car. It's a 2001 Z06 with a Lingenfelter twin turbo kit.
Ooh, hot.
Yes.
Nice.
And it looks like it has a parachute on the back. So it's like
probably needs
legit.
It. That's yikes. There was no way I was getting that.
I know.
All right, I was too easy on Doug this week. I need to be mean again.
Now I'm just getting better at this. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All-Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high-quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. It is no surprise to many of our listeners that we are all about driver cars, not driverless cars, on this podcast. We have referenced our collective favorite book, probably, Why We Drive by Matthew Crawford, many, many times. And there's some very good and different reasons against fully autonomous vehicles in that book. And if you're a car enthusiast, a driving enthusiast, or just curious about the technology, it's a fantastic read. With that said, let's talk about autonomous cars tonight. Let's talk about Waymo. They've been in the news a few times over the past year for some relatively odd things. And so I kind of wanted to just do a check-in of how they're doing based on some of these crazy articles. Some of them are a little bit of artistic license or, you know, inflammatory, right? Because it makes a good headline. But there is some crazy stuff that's happening. Not the least of which is one of my favorite ones is a Phoenix cop pulled over a Waymo. Not a driver, a Waymo. They pulled over the car for driving in opposing lanes.
So first, okay, we'll come back to the main point of that in a second. I'm just going to set that off to the side. How can they pull over an autonomous? Does it have code or something to know if it sees a certain type of flashing light to pull over?
Yes, it actually is programmed to deal with emergency vehicles quite well. Okay. And the cops have issued statements saying that they're actually brilliant to deal with, right? They typically pull over
nobody's
immediately.
Gonna talk back to you.
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody's gonna be like, "No, officer, I wasn't speeding."
Yep. They roll down the windows. They can identify police vehicles, police officers, whatever. And I wonder what happens if they get pulled over by like a police impersonator. That's gonna be a real new one. They roll down the windows, the cop presses a button, and they're immediately connected with a customer service agent. They explain the issue and, you know, typically take the necessary action. If they need to take the vehicle off the road, send out a technician, whatever, they do that. This one inspired a little bit of ire, though, in citizens and in myself, and for good reason. So there was a construction zone. The vehicle apparently moved over into the opposing lanes. Apparently the construction markings were confusing, which that's believable. We've all experienced that. But it continued to drive in opposing lanes of traffic and never got back into the regular lane. So the cop lit him up, and instead of pulling over, the Waymo took off through an intersection.
What?
Yes.
Ha!
So it was a very short-lived chase. It did pull off into a parking lot, and everything was fine. Nobody got hurt. But a couple people watched this. All of this is on body cam. It's somewhat humorous. You know, the cop is totally pleasant, wonderful, which some of us know that regardless of our skin color or our beliefs about cops, that would not go well for any of us if we did the same thing.
Like you could come rocking. And honestly, like in some, that was a very dangerous situation that the cop probably would have been trying to grapple with and get under control. Not to excuse anybody's behavior at any point, but still, like, that's honestly surprising. You'd think you'd be like hot to trot about something.
Right. Right. So the biggest issue in my mind, which I don't know how you ticket them, but you know, there was no ticket issued. And I'm like, this is a big deal. Like, this is a definite safety issue. They're driving down the wrong lane of traffic and they take off from a cop through an intersection. And the cop's super chill about it. And it's like, all right, no big deal. Get your stuff fixed. And a lot of commenters, rightly so, are like, no, that vehicle needs to be shut down immediately. Maybe even the whole fleet until we figure this stuff out.
Yeah. Now, that could have been so dangerous. That was dangerous. It could have been so bad.
Yes. Yes. It was dangerous. Could have been a worse outcome. Let's contrast this to how some police react to citizens doing that. A number of years ago, go watch the dash cam video. It's wild. Everybody who watches any police videos at all knows about the Arkansas State Police. They are famous for their pit maneuvers and wild high-speed chases. This one was no exception. A pregnant mom was driving down the highway. ASP lit her up, and she put on her turn signal and then put on her hazards, slowed down, was in the right lane, but there was limited space for her to pull over because there was a concrete barrier to the right of the breakdown lane. So it was a compressed lane. There was still room, but not much room, and it really wasn't safe. So she put on her hazards, slowed down, and like waved out the window to indicate she saw the cop and was traveling to the next exit. This cop was not having this, as within a matter of like a minute or two, pitted this woman.
What?
She hit the center median and flipped over.
Oh.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I was going to make some dumb joke about them using Need for Speed in their training sessions or something, but like, golly.
Right. So if you're a self-driving car and you take off, cop's friendly, nice, you know, no big deal. Yeah, okay, just have a nice day.
What?
If you're a pregnant mom, you know, might get pit if you do that. And the Arkansas State Patrol handbook at the time did actually say that it was official whatever protocol for if people were looking for a safe place to pull off, to put on their hazards and to continue.
Oh, it wasn't to like pit them for evading the cops?
No. Like the cop got, he's still a cop, but the cop got written up whatever disciplinary action because every single higher up that reviewed this footage said he violated protocol.
Gotcha.
The lady did get a settlement from the Arkansas State Police as well.
Is she okay?
She was fine, but she did get a big settlement, and they did also revise their policy to be more clear on when deadly force could be used, because that is deemed deadly force.
Yeah,
you
she
pit
flipped.
Somebody. Yeah.
Nothing.
Right? so anyway, it seems like these are two fairly extreme examples, but it seems like people are upset, and I'm a little upset, that there's a double standard between if a person does this versus a driverless car. The statistics are in favor of driverless cars, at least according to Waymo.
Well, that seems like there's some bias.
Fine, but they do say that they're safer, they're less prone to accidents, whatever, whatever. And arguably, that's probably true. I would probably trust a automated car versus somebody who's texting and driving. Well, there are a lot of bad drivers out there.
And yes, I mean, I guess if you dig at the bottom of the barrel, well, not even, honestly, driving down the road, I see some really shady stuff sometimes that it's like, ooh, narrowly missed something, you know, something could happen.
Right.
But I feel like, and this is a point that our buddy in spirit here makes, I think in the book somewhere, is that, you know, they only truly work if they're all driverless, if it's all, because you can't remove the human element from things unless it's all gone. And to that same point, that human element is some of what makes our reactions better and our decisions better in a moment of in intense decision making on what do I do. You know, we are much more capable of making those decisions in a like better outcome, I guess. I don't know. I forget exactly how he makes the point, but like we as humans are much more adapted to that than like a bunch of if statements in a computer, which is dramatically oversimplifying what goes on.
Did you know, and this is not a misogynistic statement, but it's going to be taken as such no matter what.
Scared.
The reason, no, seriously, I read this somewhere or learned it in racing school or something, and maybe it's even wrong. I don't know, but I have heard this, that the reason men are typically better at racing is not because of the driving skill itself, but because of just our the different programming that men and women have that's natural to their biological makeup, that men are better at the automatic reaction, like the quick reaction, whereas women are like more prone to like thinking things through. And so when you need those like microsecond reactions at 200 miles an hour, like men are just naturally better at that. Or like programmed that way, not necessarily better at it. It's just like how they're programmed. Maybe why Danica Patrick crashed all the time. I don't know. But like, you know.
Interesting.
Just something I remember reading. But yeah, it's, and the scary thing is what you just said of like, it only works if we're all automated. And that's where I think some people want to go. Obviously there's some companies that just see it as a great technology
for sure.
I think
lots of money to be made potentially.
Well, and we see it too. It's like, okay, there's 40,000 highway deaths. If we could eliminate those by automation or even say like, okay, well we're going to bring it down to 10,000. There's going to be software glitches. There's going to be errors. There's going to be issues. There's going to be cars that get hacked. All those problems will come up, but if that's a 10,000 a year death situation versus 40,000 a year for humans, I don't think any of us could oppose that.
No, and that's
with
where
a heart.
Well, and you know, I think us as car enthusiasts, I like driving. I like the act of operating a vehicle. So even if I'm in traffic or if I'm commuting, I could be tired, I could be frustrated, whatever, but there's still an aspect of like, you know, I kind of like this engaging with the machine that I am doing. If I didn't, and I just commuted in like gridlock highway at, you know, for an hour each way.
Well, it wouldn't be gridlock.
Well, but like
autonomy.
If that's what I was doing today, I could see being like, yeah, let me sit back here and read a book or scroll on my apps or whatever while somebody else, while
12-hour road trip to Maine with the family or yeah, Hilton Head or whatever. Yeah.
But absolutely. I think it's almost like that, in my opinion, that is like the wrong direction. It's like instead of creating like walkable cities or public transit, we are instead like doubling down on something that like maybe isn't the right answer for that mass transit kind of like situation. Because I don't want cars to go away. I love cars, but I understand they're like not fit for every situation.
Yeah, the public transit thing is opening up a whole nother can of worms.
Sorry,
because, just the cost. I mean, people say, oh, that's the answer. You know, why doesn't America have all these high-speed rails and trains like Europe does? I mean, the cost is astronomical for those systems. It's like, I don't remember the numbers, but I remember reading something, and it was like, you know, a highway is like $1 million a foot, and a rail system, like a high-speed rail, is like $1 billion a foot or something, that level of magnitude difference in, in the cost to build and maintain, that you can't do that across an urban expanse like America. So
yeah,
maybe it's 100,000 and 10 million or something. I don't know. But the magnitude of price difference was multiple powers of 10. We could go on that forever. There's more articles. There's more stuff about Waymo we could talk about. But we've exhausted the subject, I think.
Kyle
has one more thing.
Well, I wanted to look at one of my, you know, like I used to like to check the Carvana stock before it just made me depressed after we did that article a while ago.
Oh, yeah. Again, they're record profits again.
I wanted to look up to see what the current message is, from Tesla about their full self-driving. You know, forever ago, and I think this article, so I have an article up from techcrunch.com that was published on January 30th, so almost a month ago, talking that they are now, because back in 2016, they said that all of their cars that they were selling with hardware generation three would be full self-driving capable. And now they're finally acknowledging that that wasn't true, that we actually will need to go and upgrade all of these hardware three cars to eventually get to whatever it is that they're going to sell as full self-driving. So all of this is just marketing. And like, buy our stuff because it's going to be great. It's going to be great in the future. Even if Teslas are good cars now, this was never in the cards. So if you want to know how full self-driving is going, I think that is how full self-driving is going.
We're not there yet. Yeah. Making progress, but we're not there yet. All right. Props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves.
Including Tyler's 98 Corvette pace car.
Coming soon. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio. Doug, what is the pick of the week?
2001 BMW 740i Shorty Sport.
Ooh.
With just 20,000 miles. Oh. Steel blue metallic over gray interior. Ooh. This thing is as clean as the mileage would suggest. New arrival, Dan's shaking his head over there. It is that clean, indeed. I wanted to keep it, but I can't keep everything. So, check it out on switchcars.com. Our flop of the week. Ohio State Highway Patrol in the last couple weeks had a Dodge Charger patrol car stolen from outside their Chillicothe, Ohio post. And a chase ensued. And this is ironic because cops always tell us not to leave our keys in the cars, especially if they're running. Yet they left theirs outside running. So anyway, they're on the chase, got the dash cam, super fun to watch. At one point, the perp in the cop car came on the radio rambling just insane nonsense, which lightened up the chase quite a bit. They finally deployed spike strips, which they improperly referred to as stop sticks, which is totally false because in all the police chases I've watched, thousands, I've never seen them stop anyone. Really, they just, when magically they actually get the perp, they puncture the tires and they keep driving at 120 miles an hour just with less control. Sparks flying off the rims and stuff. But this happens to be actually the first time in history, I've verified this as truth, first time in history that after hitting the spikes, the suspect pulled over and stopped immediately.
What?
I didn't believe it. And on that note, actually, it's not the first time that a police car has been spiked in a police chase. It is the first time that the cops ever did it on purpose.
Nice.
So they got their guy and they got their car back unharmed. Amazing. Prop of the week. Multiple articles this last month. Porsche is committed to reinvesting in internal combustion technology.
Let's go.
After just a couple years ago, they were bent on EVs, EV Macans, EV Caymans, all that. And some articles mentioned that this was a costly decision, right? They've committed over $800 million to reinvesting in regular old coal-burning engine technology.
I do hope that this means they, and obviously I think they're going to continue, but their investment in like the e-fuels and all of that that they've been doing, like mm-hmm. I hope that continues and is hopefully maybe some bigwigs know that that is in a possible enough in the future that that is also a reason they're doing this other than some of the current
right. you know, market forces. Yeah, the carbon neutral fuels. Yeah. Why not?
Let's
right?
go.
Yes, let's do it. But anyway, I wanted to poke fun at those articles because they say like, oh, this is such a costly decision. It's like, no. This isn't the costly decision. Digging in, doubling down on EVs, that was a costly decision. They're just realizing it now and having to spend to unwind it. You know, it's like saying selling your car with negative equity is costly. No, you already took the loss. You're just realizing it now. Yeah. So anyway, props to Porsche for admitting the error of their ways and planning properly for the future, right? We love the environment. We want the environment to be protected. But, you know, at the same time, like economics always wins, right? If these companies can't make money, if people aren't buying EVs, they're not going to make them. Doesn't matter what the government mandates. So hopefully we can look towards a clean future with the cars we love in the form that we love them.
That was so beautiful, Doug.
I didn't even write that in advance. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.